Starting the podcast, we have Sarah Reichelt, as always, but a special guest, Tim Reichelt.
Ta-da!
Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, you guys. And good afternoon to myself here. And we're going to talk about iPhone 7 Plus today. And that's Tim's specialty. He got the 7 Plus. Sarah got the 7. Jerry's still plunking along on his 6. And so today we're going to talk about that. Good stuff. So let's start out with something fairly straightforward. Tim, this isn't your first Plus, is it? You had one before, didn't you?
That's right. I had the 6 Plus.
Okay, and you went to the 7 Plus from the 6 Plus, and that was the first Plus, right?
Yeah, that's right. Available. The 6 Plus was the first time they made the big one.
Well, the big question is, how do you like the bigger size? Did you have portability problems or any of that stuff, or did you just take right to it?
I took right to it. I really enjoyed my 6 Plus, but being a bit of a tech geek, I wanted to see what the big screen was like. I wanted to see whether the Plus would substitute for the Mini that I was using, and so whether it would mean that I didn't need a Mini. Having had it for 2 years, when the 7 came over the horizon, I thought, okay, well, now I'd like a smaller one. But I immediately guessed that there might be a problem, and the problem would be the camera, because I love the cameras. I love the development of the camera technology in these devices, and I thought, this is going to be a problem. I've enjoyed using the large one, but actually I quite liked the idea of the same technology crammed into a much smaller device and putting up with the smaller screen. But in the end, it was the camera seduced me, and I was so I got another giant phone so that I could play with the camera, basically.
Oh, wow. Gotcha. But now your hands are fairly large too, I imagine, right? I don't know why I think that, but...
Yes, sir.
Compared to Sarah,
I don't
certainly.
Think she has very long fingers. They're just normal hands.
Okay, but it's nice. And you, as you said, you had an iPad mini, so that was part of your motivation. Sarah, you had something you wanted to ask.
Well, yeah, I mean, just to get, you were talking about more about the choice, but I guess what I'm more interested in is the actual technicality, in that this is the first camera that Apple has given us with the two lenses, and I'm curious as to know how that works. What are the two lenses for?
Right. Well, just a quick step back for 2 seconds. Jerry was mentioning the size of hand size, and there's the double tap on the home button that can drop the screen down. There it goes, to bring the top of the screen in reach. It might be significant that I never use that. I always just reach up with my thumb or my other hand. So I don't know. Maybe my hands are large. All right, the cameras.
Yes,
the cameras. The 7 Plus has exactly the same wide-angle lens in one of its lenses as the 7, which is a 28 millimeter f/1.8, which is a little faster than the 6S, which was an f/2.2. So it should perform better in lower light levels, more light gathering, because the aperture is wider. And there is apparently, I read online, that there was a rumor that the wide-angle lens in the Plus was different to the wide-angle lens in the standard 7. And that's not true. Apparently, Apple are quite adamant that it's the same 28 millimeter lens. Now, the 7 Plus, as most people know now, also has a second lens. It's a 56 millimeter f/2.8, so it's not quite as fast, but it's, they call it a telephoto, and compared to the 28, it is. It's not unfair to call it a telephoto, but camera buffs would find that a 65 millimeter lens is more what they think of as a normal. Back in the day, I had, or in fact, right now, I have macro lenses, and Nikon make a 55 millimeter micro Nikkor, they call it, and that doubles as a normal lens. But here in iPhone land, the 56 millimeter is considered a telephoto, and it's beautifully, as you would expect with Apple, it's beautifully arranged so that its usage is hidden from you, in the sense that when you go into camera, the camera app, on the screen, there's a little circle with a 1x or 1x button. You push that and it jumps to 2x, and the image zooms in, and it's all extremely easy to use. And
so when you do that, it's actually switching from one camera to another, from one lens to another?
That's right. It's switching from one lens to another, and it does it instantly and seamlessly. And that might be all one ever has to do. But also, as is often the case with Apple, if you want to, you can dig a little deeper and get your hands on the levers. So the first step is, instead of tapping on that and jumping from one lens to another, you can put your finger on it and slide it from side to side, and you can zoom. It will digital zoom. You can start at 1x and then slide up to 2x, and it will switch to the second lens, and then you keep sliding. And I don't know if you can hear, but the cat's decided to go mad. You can keep sliding, and it will go up to 10x digital zoom. And in movie mode, though, it will only go up to 6x. So, but it is nevertheless, it's a point to note that you can now zoom while actually in taking a video.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, I think we didn't have that with our 6s. I think the 6s might have had that ability, but we didn't have that ability with our previous phone.
Correct. Yeah, I'm more or less on the same cycle you guys are on. I was 6, and you know, I'll be 7 here shortly.
Now there's one other.
Well, we have people listening, and Greg has asked if anybody's tried the beta with the portrait effect, the bokeh effect. And I know you have got the iOS 10 beta installed, Tim. So tell us about that portrait mode.
Yes. It's completely transparent to use. That is to say, you simply select it as you do video or what do they have? Panorama. The various options that you have there. Another one is portrait. And when you select that, it uses the 56 millimeter lens for the subject, and the 28 millimeter lens for the background. And the result, it uses its computational power, its image processing, to have the object of the photo in crisp focus. And it uses the 28 millimeter lens. It processes that image to be an out of focus foreground and background to highlight the subject of the picture. So how does it work? Well, it works seamlessly in my experience. I haven't used it a lot, but I've seen the pictures that I've taken and the pictures online seem to me to be to indicate that it works very well. Now, I'm an enthusiastic amateur, and I have noticed that the online, of course, you get hardcore professionals who have an extremely critical eye for a photograph, and I've seen some of them say that some of the images are not so good, and some of them are quite good. So they're a little more critical than I am. But as an amateur, to me, they all look. It seems to work fine. I think after the Maps episode, I think Apple has learnt their lesson and said, you announce things as betas and try them out more extensively before you declare that they're ready. So I think that's prudent. But my experience of the new portrait mode is that it's extremely smooth. Happens in real time, of course. And it doesn't work so well, I think, in low light. So because the faster lens is the 28 millimeter. The 56 millimeter lens, not only is it f2.8, but it also doesn't have the optical image stabilization. And of course, for a telephoto, that's harder, going to be harder to do. And but also, it would be nice. So there's always something where we say, wouldn't it be nice if you could just have this difficult thing? But portrait mode seems to be good.
Oh, cool. And now, do you have other experience? Have you what cameras? What other cameras do you have? Where you have that effect, the bokeh effect?
Well, the bokeh effect is a natural phenomenon that simply springs from physics, the action of physics on any lenses. If you have a pinhole lens, then, like in the very first cameras, then everything is in focus from very, very close to infinity. But as soon as you get larger apertures and more complex lenses, then then you have the depth of field effect, where there is a plane at a certain distance which is in focus, and things further away and things closer to are out of focus. And photographers have long known that you can use this to highlight what you're interested in a photograph. So generally in portrait photography, of course, you get the plane of focus to run through the face of your subject, and because that's where the eye is, our eyes are naturally drawn to check out people's faces. That's the way we operate, and so you get the plane of focus through their faces, and indeed, if you get close enough, you want the plane of focus right through their through the eyes, so that you can if that looks fuzzy, then it feels disturbing to look at. You've always used the depth of field, and bokeh is really just a name. I think it's a Japanese word, a name used to describe the out of focus sections of the photo, if I understand that correctly.
Cool, very nice.
So Apple's using the two lens system to kind of fake the depth of field of a standard camera working with a wide aperture, right?
Yes, there always was a depth of field effect. I mean, you can't really avoid it in any complex glass lens. It gets more dramatic, less dramatic with wide angle, more dramatic with telephoto. And what Apple are doing is using these two lenses and the computing power that they have in the phone to electronically create an exaggerated depth of field effect. It throws a light on one of the more fun and fascinating aspects of the development of cameras in iPhones, which is that the thing that makes the iPhone unusual compared to the old, to the cameras, the conventional dedicated cameras that it's competing with, is that it has ridiculous amounts of computing power. Now, all modern, what do they call those cameras? Just the little handheld cameras that they all have image. Yeah, quick shots, Canon quick shot, or the normal
point and
little
shoot.
Viewfinder cameras. The point and shoot.
That's
style.
It, point and shoot.
They all, that's right, they all have image processing capability now. And if you watch the evolution of them over the years, it's very impressive what they can do. And if you spend a few dollars more, you can get a more powerful image processing unit. And it's terrific fun playing with them. But when the iPhone came along, its processing capability, its computing power, raw computing power, is massive compared to what's in the those little cameras. And there's a trend of Apple gradually exploiting the computing power that you're holding in your hand relative to the camera. So at first it was you took your picture and you could manipulate it in iPhoto and so on. But as time goes on, they're utilizing it more in the actual camera app. Now, the Apple, as is their want, have made their camera app very easy to use. And in fact, it's the one I would usually turn to, and I enjoy using it. But there's a lot of power under the hood, under the bonnet, and you can buy other apps, one, for example, called Camera Pro, where they are more pointed towards the professional or more serious amateur who likes to pull all the levers and control their image in a much more old-fashioned way. So you can control your ISO, which is the digital, in the case of the phone, the digital equivalent of the old film speed rating. You can control your shutter speed. You control the aperture that the camera will use. And as you slide the little digital sliders up and down, you can see how the image will be affected on your screen. It's a lot of fun for a camera nut.
Sounds like you consider yourself one. You've messed with that, have you?
Yes, I've played with it. I really recognize when I go online and to the camera sites, I realize that I'm really a keen amateur, and there are other people out there who are very, very hardcore, and they will pull these images apart and their capabilities in excruciating detail. But I have very much enjoyed the evolution of the cameras in these phones. It's great fun watching it happen.
Now, Tim, you still have a Nikon digital SLR.
That's right.
Now, what would you use that for now in preference to the iPhone camera, or has the iPhone camera reached the stage where it can completely replace your digital SLR?
Well, it's I'm holding a Nikon D5500 in my hand, and in my other hand is the 7 Plus, and there is a massive chunk of glass on the front of this Nikon, and it is in fact an 18-55mm zoom lens, and that equates in the old SLR terms. This thing has a different structure, but it's a wide angle to telephoto zoom, and it's enormously capable and versatile, and gathers more light than the phone does. So I think I couldn't hold my head up in the camera community if I didn't point out that a dedicated digital SLR is in fact still a lot more capable than the one in the phone. But the old adage applies, which is the best camera you have is the one that you have with you. So if I am in my normal daily round, the camera in this iPhone is fantastic and I love it. And indeed, my usage of cameras has changed. I now mostly use the one in the iPhone. But if, for instance, as we recently did, we went on holiday, I will take the digital SLR, and it has a larger image sensor. It has its optics are more powerful. Its light gathering capability is still considerably more powerful. I used to have a Nikon D5300, and then I upgraded to this D5500, and the light gathering ability of it is, I find, jaw-dropping. We visited HMS Victory, and I vividly remember peering down into the well of the ship, and it was basically a black hole down there. So I stuck the camera over the edge, no flash, and took an image and then brought it up on the screen. And there was all the detail of the pump well, all picked up by the camera. I couldn't believe my eyes.
Wow,
I have
better
tried
than
out.
Your eyes.
Oh, yeah, much better. My eyes are actually not that fantastic, so perhaps that's not saying much. But the it is very dramatic, and I have tried the 7 Plus in low light, and it's good compared to other things 10 years ago. It's dramatic and wonderful, but it's not in the same league as this DSLR. So, but it's fun watching these things evolve, and things are changing fast. I suspect it's quite true that Apple are now the largest maker of how should I phrase that? The largest number of people using cameras in the world, I think. But anyway, there's an enormous one thing I find fascinating is the social aspect of this. A phenomenal amount of power is now being put in the hands of millions and millions of people. The ability to take high quality photos and high quality video is now spread throughout the whole population, and they have it with them virtually all the time, and that has implications.
Huge implications.
Actually, you're right. The social aspect of it is interesting because if you take a picture on your Nikon, you have to kind of wait till you get back home and connect to your computer and download the photo, and then you can share it. Whereas if you take a picture on your iPhone, it can be on Instagram or it can be on Facebook or on Twitter within minutes.
Yes, and that changes the way people behave.
yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yes, perhaps that we could wander off into fascinating territory there, but for a tech geek site, it's perhaps sufficient just to say that it's that the power of these devices is on a steep upward slope, and there are actually, here's a thought, in terms of the social aspects, the Apple's phone is always with you, terribly easy to use, and gives a superb result if you just point it and hit the button. And that means that in a lot of quick-fire situations across the planet, people can whip out their phone, take a picture, and the quality of the picture that they get will probably be more useful than might have been the case in the past.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Just to clarify, if anybody's interested in that app Tim was talking about that gives you access to all the camera features, it's called Pro Camera by Coco Logix. It's available in the iTunes App Store.
Oh, I had it back. Endless apologies. I called it Camera Pro.
Yeah. Well, we got it now. Super duper. Anything else you wanted to say about the 7 Plus or the camera stuff? Tim, this has been really interesting to me. I'm not an avid photographer. I just use it for convenience sake and, of course, doing surveillance on all my neighbors and stuff. But other than that,
the phone I had before was the 6, and the live pictures came along with the 6S, and I hadn't had live pictures before. And so I actually have a question I haven't managed to solve, which is I took a live picture of a close-up of some ants rushing about. And life being the way it is, the instant that I pushed the button, the ants all ran out of frame. But because it was a live photo, you could see them running past, but the actual still didn't have them. And I can't help but feel that there should be some way of scrolling backwards and forwards through that sequence of images that were captured to say, that's the millisecond that I want, the one where the ants were right there. And I haven't worked out how to do that, so I've got homework to do.
I thought it was burst. Can't you do a burst and then do that?
Oh, you certainly can with burst, but the live image is like a
oh, I know the one you're talking about. Yeah, it is, yeah. But it's not as many frames.
No, it's not. But nevertheless, I didn't capture the instant that I wanted. But I know that the image contains the data, better data than the data that it's presenting as the single image. You can see it in the quarter of a second either side, and it may be that it's simply not accessible, but if I can see it, it should be accessible.
I wonder what file format it uses. Does it use is it a movie type file format, or is it something like a GIF that you could extract the frames from? We should have a look at one of the files and see if we can get inside it.
That's a good question. If you brought it up in preview, for instance, would there be any manipulation allowed? Good thought. Anyway,
good follow-up for next week, definitely.
Live view was new to me, and it is quite fun.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to ask you about it since you're coming from the 6, as am I. And so, Sarah, you have a 7. Have you done the live view stuff yet?
I have, yeah. I did it by accident at first because it comes turned on by default. And I was taking some pictures, and then when I looked at them, they were all waving around the place. And I thought, what? And then I realized what was going on.
Gotcha. So, live view by accident.
Yeah.
Any other final thoughts, y'all?
I'd better stop there, or I'll never stop.
they keep getting better and better at these cameras, and I really feel that we're not there yet, but I do feel the day is coming when Tim will leave his SLR behind and just use the phone camera for everything.
I'm sure that's
Ooh.
True.
Did you see what Greg Dixon said? He took a live view of
no?
a deer, and he was photographing a deer. He's in the comments here, and looked up at him as he was doing it. You got it. I'd like to see that image. Share that with us.
Yeah, and I wonder
if you can.
I wonder, can he extract the one frame that when the deer looked up at him? That would be that's what Tim's after too. So yeah, we'll have an investigate about that and maybe follow up with that next week, Jerry. But we're reaching the end of our time, so thank you, Tim, for coming and sharing your camera expertise with Tim and I, with Jerry and I. And hope you enjoyed it, and hope people listening enjoyed it. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks.
Yeah,
for
and you
me.
Can. Oh, great having you here, Tim. And I'm sure you'll be back. And you can find all Sarah's good stuff at trosware.net, right?
Just tros.net.
Tros.net. That's it. And your Trosware on Twitter, and also here on Zcast.
That's right.
Okay, and I'm Jerry Daniels, one word, on Twitter and here on Zcast. And you can find my stuff at jerrydaniels.com. All righty. Well, that should do it for today, and I'm looking forward to whatever it is we cover next week. Adios, you guys.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.